My name is Shelley Harper. I am 50 years old. Today's date is May 23rd, 2015. We are at Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I am here with my mother and father.
My name is Greg Aguilar, and that's A-G-G-E-L-E-R. I'm 78 years old. Today's May 25th, or 23rd, I guess, 2015. If you go on vacation, you kind of forget the dates, you know? We're in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Phyllis and I are actually from Grand Junction, Colorado. Our daughter, Shelley, lives in Colorado Springs.
Well, my name is Phyllis Aguilar. I'm 74. Today's date is May 23rd, 2015. As he said, we're in Colorado Springs, Colorado, visiting Shelley. And a relationship to the partner is two partners, Shelley Aguilar, daughter, and husband Greg Aguilar.
You did. All right.
We'll start with what our theme is.
We want to talk about holidays.
Holidays and the families of the Aguilar, Whiting, and Aguilar Whiting years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good place to start is Greg's introduction to the
Whiting family.
To the Whiting family.
And Whiting is my mother's maiden name.
Yes. And my mother and father, my mother particularly, was just a holiday nut. Came from their whole family. Texas born. Eight children in the family, and the holidays were about all they had to celebrate because it was during the Depression. So when Greg and I were going together, we were not even married yet.
We met in college.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure how I got invited to the first Christmas, but that was the beginning of the holidays with the Whitings. And just to back up a little bit, you know, when we met, you were interested in the Catholic faith, and so we went to your confirmation, and your mom was there, and she says, "Ooh," which I was thinking, "Uh-oh, that's going to be fatal."
She says, "Ooh, Phyllis, you go after him. He's good looking. He's cute." And I said, "I'm already dating somebody else, so I don't care about him."
I'm glad you changed your mind.
That was over 54 years ago.
Yeah,
but anyway, my family, as far as Christmas holidays, was fairly routine. You know, we'd go to Mass and open presents, but there wasn't really any excitement to it at all. And Phyllis's family was really exciting and happy. It wasn't about material things. It wasn't about gifts. It was just, I guess, the mischievousness of it. You know, especially your dad.
Yeah, my dad.
Phil Whiting.
And decorations. I mean, decorate your living space and for every holiday, just about. And she just lived for that. And presents, yeah, they were there. But you've grown up. You've never known a Christmas.
Well, I didn't until I was in middle school, junior high, when Grandma and Grandpa were in Pakistan with USAID.
Grandma and Grandpa being Jean and Whiting and Phil Whiting.
Yes. And actually, Grandma's full name is Beryl Geneva Smith Whiting.
There's the librarian.
That's it. But when they were in Pakistan with USAID, that was the first time that we didn't have our Christmas spirit with us because they were gone, and that was awful.
That was the worst Christmas of my life.
And that's a good point, that it was all about relationships and people, because when we were away at college and we borrowed my brother's car.
In Seattle, by the way.
My brother's car and his credit card, drove all night to get back on Christmas Eve morning.
Yeah.
And about 5 o'clock in the morning, we pulled up, and Phyllis was very brave, went up and started pounding on the front door.
My sister, Suzanne, was in bed, and she says, "Oh, God, I hope that's not one of my friends." My dad's, you could hear him on the outside of the house, "Stomp, stomp, stomp, stomp." They did not know we were coming.
And the house was pretty bare. It wasn't really decorated. And, of course, we'd been driving all night and went to bed after saying hello. And when we woke up, the place was decorated and the lights were on. You know, it was
just... Something was cooking in the kitchen, right?
Right.
So let's back up a little bit, back to the decoration. Mm-hmm. Like what did it look like every year?
Oh, elaborate.
A Christmas
lights
tree.
Lights everywhere.
For most of my childhood, the younger childhood, it was a live Christmas tree before the artificial trees came in, with lots of multicolored lights and then ornaments that were picked up over the years that had some sort of sentimental meaning. So it wasn't like you got a set that all matched and did a fashion tree.
Yeah.
You had all of these meaningful...
ones that have been picked up over the years.
And
treasures.
And I remember sitting down as a grade school kid with my brother Brian and with Grandma and stringing popcorn together and cranberries together and putting those on the trees, with a needle and thread.
That was definitely a part of it. In my role, we'd go to the Christmas tree lot and pick out a tree, which was a production all in itself.
Pretty much all the way till the artificial trees came.
Yeah, and then we'd get it home, and I'd have to get it into a stand, and, usually we would get one that would fit in the house, that kind of thing. So it was people and experiences.
Yeah, and the decorations, it's really hard to explain, but the...
Well, one thing that comes to mind is that Grandma had the Christmas village.
Yeah.
She had the small, maybe 6-inch to 12-inch high ceramic buildings that she put together in the formation of the village. And Grandpa built her special window box later in their life when they lived in Arizona so that she could put the village outside where it used to be a flower box. He turned it into a little flat place for the village to go outside when they were...
And they had a tray with the glass
mirror
in the bottom of it. And then they set up artificial snow and had electronically operated
magnetic
thing that went underneath and then little
cascades.
Figures that go across. So there's villages everywhere. There's a village here, and then there's some kind of statue, Chris Kringle, fellow, whatever came about, and Christmas wreaths. And
always stockings, and I'm the one that is the stocking stickler now. I'm channeling Grandma, because stockings were always there, and everybody had their own stocking with their name on it, and it's still a tradition that we still do, is the first thing that you do on Christmas morning is everybody gets their stocking. And gets the little surprises, which are really fun.
Those are more fun than anything else.
Right.
Because you work real hard to get something unusual, like maybe the little bitty flashlights one year. Just fun stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so the moving on into the Christmas thing and the decorations, I wanted to talk about the year that they were living in, Grandma and Grandpa were living in an apartment. High-rise apartment with a balcony.
They were in Boise, Idaho, next to, Julia Davis Park?
The other one, Ann Morrison Park.
Ann Morrison Park.
And
this was in an apartment building. They were up maybe four or five stories.
Fourth, I think.
And Grandma, we'll just call you your
we'll
mom,
just Grandma.
Yeah, Grandma. Was a stickler for public image. And Grandpa had found a notice that Grandma had not seen. It said, rather than track your Christmas tree with the end of the season through the halls and down the elevator, just drop it over the side of the balcony. And, of course, Grandma had no idea that this was acceptable. And he walked up and said, "I'm really tired of this damn tree. I'm just going to throw it over." She goes,
doing?
She wouldn't go out of the apartment for
a week. It was a week because she was so horrified that done something like that.
Which is a big theme that we wanted to talk about, is that Grandpa, Phil Whiting, loved to play jokes. And they weren't the sort of jokes that would make you feel bad, but he loved to play practical jokes.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. Another one he played on Grandma that's not so much Christmas, but it's short, and I can give you the flavor of it, is Grandma dearly, dearly wanted to be a gardener, green thumb magician with plants.
Oh, yeah. And she,
she couldn't keep a plant alive to save her life. Poor thing. And so she's invested
in... She drowned
them. She did. She overcared.
Yeah, overcared. Yeah.
So she got a really nice... silk rubber tree.
Yeah, rubber tree. It was a
silk rubber tree plant that was behind the television. And every once in a while, Grandpa would come along and pull off one of the leaves and drop it.
So
that she, on the carpet, so that she thought she was killing an artificial. Poor Grandma.
Oh, yeah. What about the male tree?
Oh, that's far
not
back.
Holiday,
yeah.
So.
No, yeah. I had one I can't remember now. Shoot, go ahead with one that you know of.
Oh,
it doesn't have to be Christmas either.
Well, the one that I like about Christmas that poor Grandma didn't know was happening was the story with the watch.
Oh, yeah.
When
I was about seventh grade or so, and. The one thing about that is that there wasn't a Christmas with just an immediate family. It was an extended family. We have first cousins that are like sisters and brothers, and second cousins are the cousins. And so there was always somebody at the house. And when you're at Nanny and Grampy's, my mother's mother and father.
And that's
Beryl
Elizabeth Jones Smith and Wallace
Crawford
Smith.
Jones. Okay.
Yeah, I love genealogy, and what do I have? A Jones married to a Smith.
But everybody was gathered at Christmas Eve and my dad, well, poor grandma, she was the butt of every joke all through our life. And kind of wanting something really good. And there was a candy store in town called Lee's, and she loved Lee's candies. And so he went to Lee's candies. He bought her a watch, a Bulova watch back in the 50s, and had them insert a little box inside of the candy box of candy. And then he wrapped it up in a tissue that was clear enough that she could see the Lee's candies on it. And she kept looking under the Christmas tree for Grandpa's gift for her, and everybody was opening their gifts. We were all around there. There were probably 10 people around the Christmas tree. And she says, here, Jean, here's yours. This is from Phil. And here's this box of candy. she was just almost in tears. And so, well, open it up. I'd like a piece of candy. No, we'll have it later. She couldn't get her
to open it.
Finally, she opened it up, and then she found the watch, and, of course, she just collapsed. She was so afraid that Grandpa didn't do the Christmas spirit for her.
Well, that reminds me of something, because we had talked recently about I have – the short diaries that both Grandma and Grandpa kept when they were with USAID in Peshawar, Pakistan.
Right.
And in Grandma's diary, which is much different than Grandpa's, which is, this is a work log, this is what we did, and there's only a few really interesting tidbits in his, but hers was all about what the women were doing while the men were working. And there's a section in the diary when Grandpa caught a really bad case of pneumonia. And he wasn't getting better, and they came very close to airlifting him to Frankfurt, Germany for treatment. But he fortunately got better quick enough that they didn't have to do that. But apparently he was sick around her birthday. And you can just see this sort of hope that's there. And it's really kind of sad, actually, because she's really concerned, writing in the diary, she's really concerned about Phil, my grandfather. And then on her birthday, this is a diary that's got days in it, a day minder. On her birthday, she said, Phil, and then I think it said forgot or didn't remember or something, and then she didn't finish the sentence, which is the only unfinished sentence in the, she wrote it diagonally across, everything else is very tidy. And I think he was too sick to remember her birthday, and she was so disappointed, but she couldn't really be disappointed because he was so, so sick. So she could only write half of the sentence in his diary.
Oh, that is sad. Yeah. I don't think I knew that. I don't think I haven't read those diaries. So
yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So remember the Christmas that Brian and Don, Brian, my son, our son, and his new bride got married. And Don's family has three grandmothers, her mother and father were divorced, and then both remarried.
And her great grandmother was really important.
And her great grandmother, who lived in Lyman, and so
Colorado.
So they had to make the circuit all the way from.
Four different
Christmases. By the time they got to our house, they couldn't even eat.
Well, and then there's always the big debate between our family and their family, because we're an open Christmas presents on Christmas morning family.
Oh, yes.
Don's family is an open Christmas presents on Christmas Eve family.
I've always felt so sorry for Brian. You know, he never did get to open them on Christmas Day. You know? And they were really big. High value Christmas present people.
They're a lot more interested in that than us.
And the granddaughters, Aaron and Megan. I mean, they just go glassy. They get so many presents.
Well, they had four grandmothers and grandfathers and great grandmothers and two or three of those. And
two aunts. And
yeah. Two little girls. They were the first grandkids. Aaron and Megan.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Christmas we came to your house? Were you married to Wade then?
Yes.
That was Thanksgiving.
That was in Austin.
Yeah, in Austin.
And that's my husband, Wade Harper.
Yeah, Wade Harper, yeah. You weren't married because he had a place and you still had that little apartment.
Oh, right. That was right at the beginning. Okay.
Yeah, and so we trucked on down to Austin from Denver, and you and I in this little bitty apartment kitchen decided to bake a 20-pound turkey. Roast a 20-pound turkey.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's
that's not nearly as bad as trying to cook a 20-pound turkey on preheat.
No, which we did.
That was in school.
That
was so disappointing.
We could kept 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours.
It's still not done.
On preheat, huh?
Yeah, cook the whole thing on preheat.
Oh, boy.
So that was the post-Thanksgiving feast.
Mm-hmm.
When do we talk about Easter?
Oh, Easter, yes.
Yeah.
Easter.
Easter to our family was... not
to
so
our
much
immediate family.
With Grandma and Grandpa and your sister Sue and Brian and I, was not so much a religious holiday as, again, family and relationships. But really what it meant was the famous Easter egg hunt.
Oh,
and
yes.
The reward is you had a drink called an Orange Julius.
We made the drink up.
And you couldn't have your drink until you found your Easter egg with your name on it, and that was vicious.
It was a high competition.
Pretty soon we had Sue and Dean involved, and the kid, their two children.
And mom and dad.
My mom and dad. And when you were teenagers, the very best one was...
Well, when we were teenagers, Grandma and Grandpa couldn't come as much, and so we would have Christmases. We'd have Easters that were just you and Brian and I.
Usually we go to dinner at Sue's.
Right, and so we were trying... Brian and I would try to recreate these... fun, competitive Easter egg hunts that we'd had with all those other people. And so we had to make it interesting. And we were old enough to do that. And so we decided to pick on poor dad. And we found some extremely, shall we say, creative hiding places for where Dad's egg with his name on it. You couldn't find anybody else's egg. You had to find your egg on it. And I remember also that I thought that was interesting. The way you put the names on the eggs is you would take a crayon that was waxy and put the egg, that write the name before you dyed it. And so then the name would show through. But anyway, so we had to find your very own egg. And the two hiding places that I remember from those crafty teenage years, when we took off the finial of one of the curtain rods and put the egg inside the finial and put it back on.
That's one of the ones I remember.
Had the house nearly torn to pieces trying to find that egg. And he did find that one, but the one he didn't find.
We would never find. Who would think?
No, never would. Even when you said, you're getting warmer.
Yeah, it was right on top of it.
It just didn't work.
No, that was beyond...
Brian and Shelley.
Where was that one?
That one
was floating.
Just makes me up tense right now.
That one, we took a little bowl and floated it in the toilet and put the egg inside the bowl. So it was fine. But yeah, that was beyond
that's
the pale.
A different one than I'm thinking
Yeah, we're
of.
Thinking about the orange.
Oh, the orange. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. A bowl of oranges, and they'd hollow out an orange and put the egg inside of it and
put the top,
and buried it in your bowl.
And put
of
the
oranges.
Top back in and then put it in there. And so people would give you a hint about where your egg
was. You're getting warmer.
You're getting warmer. And he's looking at these, pulling these oranges out of this bowl.
Well, of course, the one that had been discombobulated was on the bottom.
Yeah.
So the ones that you would pick up were fine.
Never did get that one.
We had to help you with that one.
No, he couldn't find that.
I think you were quite relieved when we went off to college.
Yeah, we put a for rent sign on your room.
Yeah, we sold the big couch in the family room and put a couple of recliners and a little table for two.
I know. I remember coming home and seeing the clear message of two-ness.
She says, this house has been turned into a house for two people.
And you were not nearly devastated enough when I went off. I'm the youngest. When I went off to college, you all did just fine.
Oh, that was wonderful. Your college years were my favorite times.
Thanks.
Remember the time you guys, at Christmas time with a big storm?
Oh.
What am I doing?
Get closer to the mic.
Oh.
You keep backing away. That was when my senior year of high school, the big blizzard.
Oh, that's right.
In Denver, and I had gone over to...
Is that Phil the Jerk?
Phil the Jerk's house.
Oh, poor Phil. Not my grandfather, Phil. I dated a guy in high school whose first name was Phil, but he was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And
he's still a jerk.
My dad followed in the grand tradition of mom's father, who always had a nickname for her boyfriends. And so dad
found one for Phil.
He's always been, ever since, in our family, Phil the Jerk.
What were some of the names your dad had for your boyfriends?
We'll get into that. We want
really?
To stay with this story.
Okay. So this blizzard in Denver, I went over to visit Phil on Christmas Eve to exchange presents.
In your little blue
Volkswagen
bug.
It's 1983.
Yes. And there was a big blizzard that hit the city that night, and I stayed late, and so I was driving to get home for Christmas, which was really important to me because you just don't. I think we still had some family there.
No, eventually, nobody could go anywhere. I mean,
I think we had family visiting, so it wasn't, one of those desolate Christmases when
Grandma and Grandpa there? I thought it was just us four, but...
I don't remember. But anyway, I was driving home in this little Volkswagen bug, very light, and there was Orchard Road, I think. There was a road that I had to go through that was a very steep downhill and a very steep uphill. And so I let
the
speed...
This is the one we called Clutch Hill?
Yeah.
Clutch Hill.
I let the speed gather and went zooming downhill, trying to stay on the road. And I passed by cars that were stuck, and I felt really guilty that I didn't stop. But I'm thinking, I'm not stopping. And so my car was light enough that it got up that hill, fortunately, and I got home for Christmas. But
well,
I was...
I'm looking out the... no cell phones in those days.
Yeah,
we didn't have Phil the Jerk's phone. And so the snow, I'm looking out the window and the snow drakes is just getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And where is she? She better get home. And pretty soon the little Volkswagen bug drives up and there's Shelly. And so got Shelly in the house. I think we were just that four in the house. We were supposed to go to Sue's for dinner.
Oh, yeah. Was she in Evergreen?
No, they were in the house in
Lakewood.
Lakewood, okay. Yeah. So Brian was home from Fort Collins from college, Colorado State, and he was just happened to be home, and I tied a rope around his leg, and he couldn't go anywhere.
That was interesting.
Yeah, and it was hard to keep him tied down. But so we got Shelley in the house, and we were all together, the four of us, and we were going to go over to Sue's the next day for
Christmas, and we couldn't go anywhere.
No, the roads were completely down. I mean, right in front of our house. They were all shut down.
Yeah, we could walk right down the middle of a major boulevard.
It was the first Christmas in our entire life that was just the four of us. And so we played Monopoly. I mean, it was a captive audience for Mom and Dad.
You loved it because by then we were always out with friends.
Yeah. Oh, it was. And Brian was at college and had buddies stuck at the airport, couldn't get back. And so he's going to go out and get him. So he's got his Baja buggy. He's going to drive out. And I said, you can't go out there, Brian. So this car will make it. He couldn't even get out of the driveway.
His mom says, don't make me get out the rope.
So he was totally captive. He couldn't move.
Yep.
That was an interesting Christmas.
One thing that I wanted to mention, too, about holidays was the food.
Oh.
Grandma was such a fantastic cook.
There was all southern Texas. They were from Amarillo. And the cooking from all that whole family, my grandmother, Nani, was just an incredible cook. And all of them, all those sisters were. And
that's
the food.
The custard, right?
The custard, the custard is coming up.
Okay, so this boiled custard, if you grow up with it, it's magical.
It's just wonderful.
Oh, it's delicious. If you don't grow up with it, as Dad did not, and as my husband Wade did not, it's not what you would call magical.
They go,
yeah. What's so exciting?
But
all of the people who grew up with it loved it and would, like climb over the bodies of their cousins to be able to have some, but it took forever to make.
I think it took about 7 hours. You had to stand at the stove and stir and stir.
Yeah,
and
because you couldn't.
Yeah, explain how it, that
boiled custard.
It's
a southern dish, eggs and milk. And
cream?
Vanilla. Cream, maybe. I don't know, but you had to keep stirring it so that
it wouldn't burn.
I don't know. We have the recipe, but.
I know, but I've never made it, have you?
Oh, gosh, no. Are you kidding?
Right. So we haven't had boiled custard in way too long. Right. But so she would make boiled custard at Christmas. So she would stand for hours at the stove stirring this pot of custard. And then all of us are just salivating, waiting for the custard to be done, and Dad or anybody else who didn't grow up with it are like, yeah, have at it.
Or you would always say, great, that's more for me.
That's right. That's what we'd say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, sir. You don't like it? Oh, good.
Divide it
up. I don't know what it was. It was just one of those things.
That's like the Tom and Jerry mix.
Oh, yes. If you're talking about Tom and Jerry.
About the Tom and Jerry mix.
Yeah, this was one of the family secrets. And my dad took my brother Harold and I aside and said, okay, you're old enough. I'm going to show you how to make this. Other people do Tom and Jerry's, but they get in a rush. They don't take their time and do it right. And so I'm going to show you how to do it. And my brother never really followed up after that, but I really got into it. And it, basically what it is you take eggs and separate them, and then you spend a lot of time just with the egg whites and build those up. And every time you change from an egg white to an egg yolk, you have to clean the beater, keep everything just like surgically clean. It probably takes a couple hours.
Powdered sugar.
Yeah, and work the powdered sugar in. It just takes forever. And then what you do with the Tom and Jerry topping is you make a combination of Christian Brothers brandy and
rum.
Some kind of a rum brand. And you mix them either 2 to 1 or
I think it was
whatever.
two brandy to one rum.
Right. And what's beautiful about it as a Christmas drink is with that topping being so sweet, people would just really want to put them away. But that Christian Brothers brandy and rum were there too. But what's nice about it is if you leave it alone for a while, you would quickly you know, get your head clear and that kind of thing, so you could drive
home. You put
home.
It in hot water. You put the brandy and rum in, and then hot water, and then the topping on top
right.
of it.
Right. And, you know, people just go crazy over it. And some people would overdo it.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Just about everybody.
Well, I remember you became very famous for your Christmas Tom and Jerry's, and you guys would have a party where you invited almost everybody that you know, and they would wait with anticipation like we would wait for the custard. They would wait for the Tom and Jerry's and want to have some.
And one thing about being the one making them is I would always have one. You know?
Well,
we'd start way before people would come because it...
Yeah.
You couldn't be making
it
while you were there.
It took 2 hours or so.
At least.
And there was one time we made some when we lived on Hot Springs Drive, and I had to borrow an egg beater.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the egg beater leaked oil.
Oh, no.
Into the batter. So
we had to throw it out.
We had to buy him a new beater.
Throw it all out.
Oh, no.
The one I remember of the Tom and Jerry's is when Nani had... wanted to try them, and so she said, "Oh, that's pretty good." And so she had two, or
at her age.
At her, she was in her 80s, and she walked stood up. She could she was just weaving, walked into the door frame. She was absolutely looped. So they tasted so good, and it didn't, you know, so smooth that it didn't. Even.
But that reminds me of another famous story of the mincemeat pie in Seattle.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah, we were in Seattle while I went to the University of Washington and got my undergraduate degree. And I'm not sure. We had my brother Harold and his wife Shirley
and Marty.
Harley and
Marty was there.
Harley Henshaw and some
I don't
of those.
Think Harley was. I think it was just all family.
Was it?
Yeah, and Marty was there.
Marty is Dad's sister.
And of course, we were pretty good drinkers. And Phyllis was fixing the dinner. And
no, I was just doing pies.
Just pies?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, why don't you tell us how you made that particular pie?
The pie was actually, my mincemeat pie is absolutely fabulous.
It's delicious.
And what you do is you bake the pie, and then when it's still warm, before you put the crust on, before you put the crust on the top, you put, you kind of sprinkle some brandy on top of it, like that. And then you put the crust on, and then you bake it. Well, we'd been drinking Tom and Jerry's.
Oh, okay.
And so it was time to put the pie in the oven, and I was making the pie, and I had the brandy bottle, and gonk, just dumped a bunch of brandy in there, put it in, baked it, and Harold had a took the first bite. And he took a bite, and he went, woo!
That was a pie that got better by age.
It did. A month later, it was even still delicious.
Yeah.
Well, what were some of the ones after that weren't Christmas? Most of those stories were from Christmas.
Well, the other thing I wanted to make sure we mentioned were Grandma's cinnamon rolls.
Oh, okay. Oh, we're still talking food. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Grandpa comes into play.
Yes. Oh, okay. So my grandmother made these absolutely delicious and one-of-a-kind homemade cinnamon rolls that everybody was just like the boiled custard. Everybody wanted some. And there were finally we had the last cinnamon rolls were doled out around the table. And Grandpa
really hard to make too.
Yes, and Grandpa ate his down, and Grandma was very carefully peeling the outside
it.
All
getting
the way
down to
in,
the heart of it, where the cinnamon
it's all buttery and warm and juicy, and she gets all the way down to the heart of the cinnamon roll, and Grandpa plucks it out of her fingers and eats it.
I couldn't believe they do that.
I never saw such a horrified look on her face
because there wasn't any more.
No, they were gone.
It. I mean, that was done. And then they're still married.
Yeah.
Well, they were.
They were, yeah.
I was a little doubtful for a minute.
Yeah.
I was expecting a real battle.
Dabbing.
That was quite a bit different than my
family. Your family,
my
yeah.
Family
we
holidays.
Seemed to have quite a lot of fun. 5 minutes. Oh, how am I supposed to say that? Can you think of any of them that weren't Christmas?
I can think of it. No, if a Thanksgiving story. I just actually posted a picture of this on Facebook. for unknown reasons, because when I was, we weren't churchgoers when I was at home growing up, but for unknown, and neither was Grandma. She would always make my brother and I out at the very nicely laid out Thanksgiving dinner table with a turkey on the table. She'd always have us sit down and pose like we were praying. Which we never did.
Ever. Nobody in the family did.
No, but on that day we would pretend like we were praying.
Norman Rockwell.
Yes, exactly. And so we have lots of these pictures of Brian and I through the years praying,
growing up, with all the table set and the turkey.
Right, and so I put that on Facebook, and of course all the cousins were commenting, and one of them said, yeah, how do you know that you weren't pretending to pray?
Yeah. Yeah, that brings up another Christmas story.
Okay.
We were at Sue and Dean's.
The ice cream.
Had all the family there.
Oh, yes.
And Phyllis and Sue.
Snowing. Snow was coming
just
down.
Just a blizzard.
Yeah.
And they had everything. They had pie and cake and everything, but they did not have any ice cream.
No ice cream.
No ice cream for my father is
indeed
a serious business.
Yes.
So I got out and got in the car and just drove around
town.
Go
find a store open on Christmas Eve at about 7 o'clock.
Yeah, and I did find a place and got some ice cream and bought it back, but nobody was really happy about it.
Oh, after an hour later. And we're sitting at the table ready to have dessert. And I still shake my head on that.
Well, you didn't know. It surprised me. I went all that effort. Nobody really did.
And Dean did. Dean was happy.
Oh, Dean, yeah. Both of us were big
Dean.
Ice cream guys.
But see, Mom had some value from that because she never, after that, let you forget about the famous journey to find ice cream.
She has a good memory.
Yes. Are there any 4th of July ones? I am trying to remember. We had so much fun at 4th of July, always.
Just that was Dean's birthday.
Yeah, Dean's birthday, and I can't right off the head top of my head think of it.
Well, I remember being up in the Evergreen for the 1976 Fourth of July, and
everybody was there.
Yes, but we were coming down the hill after dark, and so we never got to see the fireworks on this 1976 bicentennial. Fourth of July, I was so disappointed, and I remember sitting in the back seat of the car riding down the mountain down to Denver, thinking, oh, great, I have to live to be 111 before I can see the next centennial's fireworks. Wonderful.
I got one for the 4th of July. I was at Avon. Were you in Avon? Were you there then? I don't remember. It was 4th of July. Dean and Sue and the family, everybody. There were a lot of Dean's family there. And at Avon, there's this big lake. And we were staying in the lodge where you could just walk right out and get seats down, and it was just all beautiful night, and they have the fireworks right over the lake, and all of a sudden this mom and dad, grandma and grandpa were there, and this wonderful aroma came floating out. It was a warm, beautiful night, and stars, and the fireworks, and this wonderful aroma, and my mother could not figure out for her life, what the heck is that smell? Of course, it was
marijuana.
Yeah. All the way around the lake.
Yeah, it was kind of a cloud.
Yeah.
That was probably in the, 80s, 70s, something like that.
Yeah. So, pretty much holiday people.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
All holidays.
I'm a happy man.
And a lucky one, too.
A lucky man, too.
But even though Mom never let you forget the ice cream journey, I've noticed that every time we have any sort of gathering, we always have ice cream now.
Yeah. Makes sure.
I set a precedent.
Well, it's good. It's fun. Yes. It's fun to have family that loves to get together.
Yeah, it's the people.
Yeah, it's not anything but the people.
The relationships, the stories, the jokes, the fun.
The memories.
When we borrowed poor Harold, and we left Harold and his wife and your mom and dad for Christmas holiday. We were just first married.
In Seattle.
And borrowed his car.
And credit card.
And drove to Boise.
Well, the sad part was he had a Christmas tree set up, a live tree. And when we came back, that tree was so dead.
Sad.
We really felt bad about that.
But you never felt bad about actually going home for Christmas.
No. Too shallow, too young.
It was the first Christmas after we were married.
Oh, that's hard.
And she was going to be away from family.
I've never been away from home before in my entire life. Right.
And you were just a child bride.
I was.
So I'm just very, Dad's lucky, but I'm lucky too that we had such a great relationship-based family to have all those memories with.
The whole extended family.
Mm-hmm.
It was a treasure. It really was. Mm-hmm. And sitting in a house with all the presents and stacked up like Don's family did.
It
doesn't have the same thing. It's that feeling inside that.
Yeah, we had the cats that would get into the presents under the tree and bite into all of them.
Jack bite every one of them.
So we're out of time.
Okay.
So, well, you've got a lot more years to go.
Thank you for all of the holidays.
Yes, you're welcome. Glad you were there.
Me too.